Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of, 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
Story 1. I grew up in Derby, and when I was a student in my early 20s, I took a summer job at an old theme park near Matlock. You'd probably know the name if I said it. It's one of those parks people go to more for nostalgia than the rides. A lot of the buildings haven't changed since the 70s. You could still smell damp wood in the corners of some of the shops. Anyway, it paid okay, and I wasn't in a position to turn work down. There was this gift shop next to a family ride that had a reputation. People joked it was haunted, that things moved on their own, cold spots, that kind of thing. I didn't care. I'm a biology student. I've dissected cadavers. Ghost stories don't rattle me. I figured people just made things up to break the boredom. Midway through July, I got moved to that very shop. My first shift there was a late one with a girl named Katie. She was a few years older, very jittery, and kept making me promise I wouldn't leave her alone in there. I thought she was winding me up. She wasn't. That shop had a weird layout, tight aisles, glass shelves crammed with cheap toys, and a narrow stockroom at the very back where the only light switch was. You had to go all the way in to turn the shop lights off. Real smart planning. As we were locking up that night, Katie wouldn't come further than the threshold. "You go," she said, half laughing, half serious. "I don't go back there after dark." I rolled my eyes and walked to the back. "You're all just psyching yourselves out," I said. I remember saying it loud, like I was trying to prove a point. I hit the switch and everything dropped into darkness except the faint orange glow from outside coming through the front window. I turned to head back. That's when I heard it. A child's laugh, high-pitched but weirdly close. Then, footsteps. 4 or 5 rapid light steps across the linoleum, like someone small running barefoot behind the shelves. Then silence. I froze. For a second, I thought it might have been one of the speaker toys we sold, but those didn't trigger unless you squeeze them. I stayed completely still, straining to hear. Nothing. Dead quiet. I told myself someone was playing a prank. Maybe one of the ride staff slipped in to mess with the new guy. I kept walking toward the front, trying not to seem phased, but Katie was gone. The door was wide open, and she was sprinting toward the staff building, full pelt. I thought it was overkill until I got to the office. She was there in one of the chairs crying. She said, and I quote, "I saw it right behind you. A little kid. He was chasing you. But he wasn't right. He didn't look right." I laughed. I did. I couldn't help it. I told them they were messing with me. Everyone else just looked uncomfortable, like they didn't know what to say. But that wasn't what got to me. What got to me was that Katie didn't come in the next day, or the next, and she didn't come back to that shop again, ever. 2 nights later, I was closing the same shop, alone this time. I wasn't scared, just on edge. I even muttered to myself walking in, "Let's get this over with." The back room felt colder than usual, but I blamed the old AC unit above the door. I switched off the lights and turned around. Instantly, I felt it. That thing you get when someone's watching you. Not just watching, standing right behind you. I was dead still for a few seconds, listening. Nothing. Then I took a step forward. That laugh again. Right next to my ear. I spun around. Nothing. I took another step, faster this time. Behind me, footsteps. Sprinting this time. Not away from me, towards me. Like something was rushing me. I turned, but before I could even see anything, I felt this shove in my lower back. Hard. I flew forward and smashed into one of the shelves with a clatter. Didn't fall, but I felt the sting of it. My elbow hit glass. I didn't look back. I ran straight out the door, slammed it shut, fumbled with the keys for what felt like a full minute before I locked it, then ran all the way back to the staff room. I was soaked in sweat, shaking like I just had a car crash. I told my supervisor I wasn't doing that shop again. Didn't care if they sacked me. I didn't sleep properly for about a week after that. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw that pitch black aisle, heard that laugh, felt that shove. The next morning, I checked the CCTV footage. They said the system had glitched. Nothing recorded after the lights went off. To this day, I don't know what the hell happened. Maybe there's an explanation. Maybe there isn't. All I know is I felt it. I heard it. That wasn't my imagination. Story 2. We lived in a small red house on the edge of Umeå, way up in northern Sweden. Long winters, lots of snow, forests in every direction. It was one of those quiet suburbs where everyone left their doors unlocked and kids wandered around until dark without anyone worrying too much. I was maybe 7, maybe 8. I don't remember the exact year, but I remember the kitchen, the yellow wallpaper with tiny ducks, the constant ticking of the clock above the window, and the old black Philips tape recorder that used to sit on top of the fridge. That tape recorder was my favorite thing in the world. It had two cassette decks, and you could dub from one to the other. My dad showed me once how you could record something really slow on one tape, then play it at double speed when you dubbed it. Made you sound like a cartoon, like Alvin and the Chipmunks. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. Most nights, I'd sit in the kitchen and just make dumb tapes. Silly little stories, songs I made up, jokes only a 7-year-old would find hilarious. My parents would usually be nearby, Dad reading in the living room, Mom folding laundry, my older sister probably sulking somewhere. That particular night, they were all around. It wasn't late, maybe 7, 8 at the latest. The lights were on. Nothing about it felt strange at the time. I was messing around with the recorder as usual. I don't remember exactly what I was recording, but I do remember how I ended it. I said in a really slow voice, "Och alla de andra barnen." That means, "and all the other children." It was part of some goofy story I was telling, something about ghosts or a haunted playground. I was really into ghost stories back then, so I dubbed it, hit play on the second tape. And yeah, it played back exactly as I expected. My voice sped up, chipmunked, saying, "and all the other children," and then silence, just for a second, a short, sharp pause, and then it came, a voice, deep, hoarse, not mine, not any of ours. It said the exact same words, "and all the other children," but the way it said it, like it was mocking me, like it was mimicking me, with this dry, guttural tone that didn't belong to anyone I knew. I remember the way it hit me. It felt like ice water pouring into my chest. My mom was the first to react. She was standing by the counter, and I swear she physically flinched, like someone slapped her. My dad stood up from the couch in the next room and came in. "What was that?" he said, his voice tight. My sister just stared. I didn't say anything. I just hit stop. We all just stood there for a few seconds. I think we were all waiting for someone to explain it. Maybe Dad would say it was a radio transmission, or that I'd recorded someone accidentally, or the tape was damaged, or it was just one of those weird glitches old cassettes sometimes do. But no one said anything, so I rewound it. My hands were shaking a little, but I pressed play again. Same thing. My voice chipmunked, "and all the other children," then silence. Then that voice again. Louder this time. Meaner, like it was laughing at us. "And all the other children." My dad hit stop, pulled the tape out. "That's enough," he said. His voice was low, controlled. He opened the second deck and took that tape out too. He didn't look at anyone. Just said, "Go brush your teeth, all of you." I remember standing in the bathroom, brushing my teeth, and trying not to cry. I wasn't even sure why I was scared. Nothing had actually happened. But the voice, there was something wrong with it. It didn't sound like something that came through the recorder. It sounded like something that was in it, like it was hiding inside, waiting. Later that night, I crept out of bed. I just wanted to look, just to make sure the tape recorder was still in the kitchen and not, I don't know, somewhere else, but it wasn't there. I peeked into the living room and saw my dad outside, in the snow, in just his sweater and boots, standing by the metal trash barrel. He was burning both tapes. I watched him for a long time. He never looked up, just stood there watching the flames. The next morning, I asked him why. He said, there was something wrong with the tape, that's all. But the look in his eyes told me that wasn't all, not even close. We never talked about it again. The tape recorder disappeared not long after. Mum said it broke, but I never saw it in the trash. It just vanished. Years later, I brought it up again as a joke. I was home from university and we were sitting around the dinner table. I said something like, remember that time the tape recorder talked back? Nobody laughed. My sister just looked down at her plate. My mum got up and started clearing dishes. And my dad, after a moment, said, I don't want to talk about that. That was the last time I ever mentioned it. I've tried to explain it over the years. Interference from a radio. Something recorded earlier that got dubbed accidentally. But I always come back to the same thing. How the voice knew exactly what I said. It said the exact same words. Perfectly timed. Like it was listening, waiting for its turn. I never recorded my voice again after that. Not once. And I never heard that voice again. Story 3. I live in a quiet cul-de-sac on the outskirts of Ottawa. Just 7 houses all spaced out with wide driveways and those standard motion lights that flick on if a raccoon so much as sneezes. Everyone here knows each other by first name. Dave and Cheryl on my left. Mr. Tran and his daughter to my right. So when something out of the ordinary happens, it sticks out like a sore thumb. This was back in late December during the 2012 NHL lockout. No games, no distractions, so I was watching the World Juniors to fill the gap. It was around 3:15 a.m. I remember the exact time because Canada had just tied it up, and I checked the clock hoping overtime wouldn't run too long. I'd taken the week off work, so I didn't care much about the time. But still, I remember looking. Now the way my living room is set up, the TV faces away from the front window. But we've got these vertical blinds that never fully close unless you tug them shut. And that night, they were just slightly cracked open. I saw headlights swing around and light up the wall, so I leaned back on the couch and looked out through the gap in the blinds. A white cargo van was creeping into the cul-de-sac. No company logo. No markings. Not clean either. Like smudged with salt and grime, as if it had been driving through back roads all day. It stopped directly in front of my house. Not a house, my house. I just sat there, frozen. At first I thought maybe they were lost, or delivering something weirdly late. But then the engine cut and the passenger door opened. Then the rear sliding door. 3 people got out. I couldn't see their faces clearly, but I could tell they were all dressed in black. Black hoodies, maybe gloves. One was taller than the rest, moved fast like he knew where he was going. 2 of them went to my neighbor's house, Mr. Tran's place. The 3rd one walked straight toward my front door. Now, I don't scare easy. I've lived through break-ins when I was younger. I've had drunks stumble up the wrong driveway. But this felt different, calculated, not a mistake. I muted the TV and crouched below the window, heart pounding. I could hear the footsteps crunching in the snow. Slow, steady steps, like he wasn't in a rush, but he knew exactly where he was going. I reached for my phone but didn't dial. I didn't know what I was even supposed to say. Someone's at my door in a hoodie? That's not illegal. Then, nothing. No knock, no doorbell, no sound at all. I waited, listening, not even breathing properly. 5 minutes went by, then 10, still nothing. I finally peeked out the side window, trying not to be obvious. The van was gone, just gone. I hadn't heard it start up. I didn't hear tires crunching on the snow, no headlights swinging across the houses. It just wasn't there anymore. I went back to the door and looked through the peephole. Nobody. Still, I didn't open it. Just stood there for a few more minutes, locked everything again, and went back to the couch, where I stayed awake until sunrise. I didn't sleep a second. Now here's the part that really messed with my head. The next morning, I went out to shovel the driveway. It had snowed overnight, light but enough to leave a thin, even coating across everything. I was halfway done when I remembered what had happened, so I walked over to the front steps to check if there were any prints. There were clear footprints in the snow, coming from the street and heading directly up to my front door. Deep enough that you could tell the person had been wearing boots. They went straight to the doormat. But that's it. They stopped there. No prints walking away, no scuffs, no disturbance in the powder. Nothing. It wasn't just that they hadn't gone back the way they came. They hadn't gone anywhere. There were no exit tracks. The snow was completely undisturbed beyond that one path. I walked a slow circle around the front of my house, checking the yard, the side path, even under the hedges. Nothing. Now I know what you're thinking. Maybe the snow just covered the prints after he left. That's what I told myself at first, too. Except I could see my own fresh prints in the driveway from 10 minutes earlier. Clear as day, so whatever came to my door never left my door. I even asked Mr. Tran later that week if anyone had come by their place that night. He just looked at me confused and said no. His daughter's bedroom faces the street, and she didn't mention anything either. They didn't have any weird footprints in their yard. No camera footage either. They didn't have a system back then. I checked with Dave across the street. Same deal. Nothing unusual. Nobody else even noticed the van. So who the hell were those people? And more importantly, what happened to the one that came to my door? Where did he go? I've run through every possibility in my head. Some prank, someone messing with the wrong house, or maybe even some kind of hallucination from staying up too late. But I saw those prints. They were real. The snow doesn't lie. Story 4. I'm not the kind of person who scares easily. I grew up in a pretty normal suburb outside Columbus, Ohio, in one of those 90s-style two-story homes with squeaky floors and a basement that always smelled like old carpet. We weren't rich, but my parents kept the house in good shape. It's the kind of place where nothing weird ever happens, which is why this still bothers the hell out of me. This happened when I was 18. I had just graduated high school, still living at home, and my sleep schedule was completely shot. I was staying up all night, watching crap on YouTube, scrolling through Reddit, just wasting time. It was one of those humid summer nights, no breeze, windows open, but not helping. I remember I couldn't get comfortable, so around 2 a.m., I decided to get up and grab something from the kitchen. I didn't turn on any lights. My parents' room was just across the hall, and they're light sleepers, especially my dad. He gets pissed if you so much as sneeze past midnight. So I was moving slow, careful, tiptoeing through the upstairs hallway and down the stairs. The house was dead quiet, just the faint hum of the fridge and the occasional creak of the wood under my feet. Now here's the thing. I know this house. I lived there my whole life. I know exactly how many steps it takes from the bottom of the stairs to the kitchen doorway. I know where the fridge hums a little louder and where the floor near the sink gives a little under your heel. I turned the corner into the kitchen, two steps in, and the light, click, snapped on. Not dim, not flickering, just full brightness, like someone hit the switch. I froze. I remember my brain didn't go straight to fear. It went to what the hell? I thought maybe one of my parents was already in there, and I just hadn't noticed. But no, I was looking right at the switch, right there on the wall by the doorframe. No one was near it. I hadn't brushed past it. I hadn't touched anything. There was no timer, no sensor, just an old school flip switch. You have to physically press it. I stood there for a second, blinking under the harsh light, heart pounding a little now. I looked around. The kitchen was empty. Chairs tucked in, counter clean, TV in the other room off. Hallway behind me dark. Everything looked completely normal, but I had this feeling, that static, crawling feeling you get when someone's watching you. The hair on the back of my neck was standing up. I can't explain that part, but I swear it was like something was there. Like the air felt different all of a sudden, heavier. I whispered, "Hello?" Nothing. Not even the floor creaked. Now I was getting pissed. I thought maybe my dad was messing with me. He's the type to play pranks. Not often, but sometimes, and always with this smug little grin, like he's waiting for you to freak out. I walked back down the hallway, checked the living room. Empty. I went down to the basement. Even checked the garage. Nothing. Everyone was dead asleep. My parents' door was cracked open just a little. My mom was snoring. I even stood there and listened for a few seconds to make sure they weren't faking it. It was real. I circled back around and came into the kitchen from the other side. The light was off. Like completely off. I hadn't touched it. I hadn't heard it click again. But it was pitch dark now. Exactly like it was when I first came downstairs. I stood there in the doorway, just outside the room, looking at that empty kitchen. And I swear to God, I couldn't make myself go in. Something about the way the light was on for that 1 second and then off again, with no one around, no explanation. I can't describe it right. It wasn't just creepy, it felt wrong. Like the room was trying to convince me nothing had happened. Like I had imagined it, but I hadn't. I know I didn't. It's not like the light flickered or glitched. It was sharp, controlled, like someone had flipped the switch with purpose. The way you do when you're about to grab something and don't want to trip in the dark. But there was no one there. Eventually, I turned around and went back upstairs. I didn't grab a snack. I didn't look behind me. I just went straight to my room, locked the door, and lay there in bed with the covers pulled up, staring at the ceiling like a 5-year-old. In the morning, I checked the light switch. Worked fine. I even tried walking in front of it a few times to see if maybe it was something electrical or my shadow triggering a sensor. Nothing. I asked my parents casually if we'd ever installed motion lights in the kitchen. My mom laughed. What for? I haven't told anyone else. Not really, it sounds so small, so dumb, like I'm making a big deal out of nothing. But I can't explain it. That light coming on by itself. The way it felt like I was seen in that exact moment, the total silence that followed, and the light being off when I came back, it sticks with me. Story 5. I grew up in a city most people wouldn't think twice about. Just another middle-of-the-map California suburb with the usual chain stores and gas stations. But what made it different, at least to me, were the bike trails. They ran all through town like hidden arteries, winding behind neighborhoods, ducking under overpasses, and carving through old stretches of woods no one really talked about. It was a Saturday morning when this happened. A couple years ago, maybe 3. I was 17, and my friend Nate and I were riding the trails like we always did. We had a favorite loop, about 9 miles, mostly dirt, and quiet enough that you could go a whole stretch without seeing another person. That was kind of the appeal. Felt like our own space, away from everything else. The trail ran under this old overpass about halfway through the loop. Concrete walls on both sides, with weeds growing up through the cracks, and always just a little too dark in the middle no matter the time of day. Nothing unusual about it, really. We'd been through it 100 times, but that day, I don't know. The second we saw it coming up, I had this weird tightening in my chest, like a warning. Not fear, exactly. Just this feeling like I shouldn't be there. Nate was ahead of me, maybe 20 feet. We weren't talking much, just cruising. The tires hissed over the dirt and broken pavement. When he hit the underpass, his figure kind of disappeared into the shadow for a second. I followed a moment later, and the second I passed under, right there, dead center beneath the road, I felt it. It was like a hand grabbed my right ankle. Hard. Not a brush, not a trip, not my chain catching my pants. Fingers, wrapping around the bone just above my shoe, yanking downward. I nearly crashed. My foot flinched and the pedal spun wild. I looked down immediately, trying to see what the hell it was. But there was nothing. No root, no garbage, no snag. Just the trail. I coasted out the other side, heart racing, not saying anything. I thought maybe my shoelace got caught. Or my pants. Something normal. 10 seconds later, Nate looked over his shoulder and slowed a bit. You feel that? He asked, real casual, but his voice was tight. Office. I didn't say anything at first. Then I asked, what? He glanced back at the underpass behind us. When we went under, something grabbed my ankle. I slammed both brakes and stopped dead. Your right ankle? I asked. He stopped too. Yeah. I stared at him for a few seconds, then just said, dude. That's all I said. Just that. And his face changed immediately. He knew. He knew I felt it too. We didn't talk after that. We just started pedaling. Fast. Not full sprint, but no more coasting either. Just steady and hard, like if we kept moving, it couldn't happen again. Neither of us turned around. Not once. I don't know why. I didn't hear anything. Didn't feel anything else. But I swear to you, it felt like something was watching. Not from the trees or the trail, but from right beneath the road, like whatever was under there had hands and it missed. I didn't ask him to talk about it after. I didn't want to know more. If he told me he saw a face, or heard a voice, or felt nails, I don't know what I'd do with that. I needed to leave it right there, in the silence between us. A week later, I asked him if he wanted to ride again, and he said sure. We did the same loop, same direction. When we got to the overpass, he didn't slow down. Neither did I. But I noticed we both took the wide edge of the trail, hugging the sunlit part instead of going down the middle. No grabbing that time. Nothing strange. Just shadows and weeds and the sound of rubber tires on concrete. I've passed through there probably a dozen times since. Alone. During the day. At night once too with a headlamp. Never felt it again. But here's the thing. That trail runs through the old part of the city, behind a retired landfill, past a drainage culvert, and under a road that nobody really uses anymore. There are no homes there, no businesses, just fences and dry brush and power lines humming overhead. Story 6, I lived with my parents in a quiet cul-de-sac in northern Michigan, in one of those older ranch-style houses with creaky floors and baseboard heaters that clicked all night.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
This happened when I was 16, and even though I've tried to explain it to myself 1,000 different ways, I still can't. Not fully. It was around 11:30 p.m. on a Thursday. I'd just gotten off the phone with my friend Gabe after a long debate about a stupid math assignment. My parents were asleep down the hall, and the house was silent except for the hum of the bathroom fan and the occasional soft creak of the wood settling. I was brushing my teeth, leaning over the sink, watching my reflection out of habit. Both our cats, Scout and Moose, had jumped up on the counter next to me like they always did during my nighttime routine. Scout sat next to the soap dish, tail flicking, and Moose had wedged himself behind the faucet, staring at the running water like it was the most fascinating thing in the world. I remember all that clearly. What I don't understand is what happened next. As I stood there brushing, I felt something rub against my leg. Like a cat doing that slow, winding motion around your calf. You know that feeling. Just enough pressure to notice. Brushing fabric and then moving along. I glanced down, assuming one of them had jumped off the sink, but both cats were still right there on the counter. Watching me, my heart immediately picked up. I stood still, toothbrush hanging from my mouth, foam starting to drip down my chin. I looked down again. My pajama pants leg was moving. Not just a wrinkle or a breeze. I could actually see the fabric pressing inward slightly, like something was sliding along it, like something was physically there, pressing against me. But there was nothing there. I backed up fast and hit the cabinet behind me. The toothbrush clattered into the sink. My leg still tingled where I'd felt it. Both cats suddenly jumped down at once and bolted out of the bathroom. No warning, no noise, just gone. I just stood there, frozen. I didn't want to move, didn't want to breathe too loud. That feeling, something brushing against you that isn't there, it makes your brain start glitching. It's like your body knows something is wrong before your head can catch up. Then the heater kicked on. It made its usual loud clank, and that broke me out of it. I stepped out of the bathroom and into the hallway. It felt darker than normal. I don't know how to explain that. Like the shadows looked heavier, even with the hall light on. I called out for the cats, voice shaking, and Scout came running around the corner almost immediately. But Moose didn't. Now Moose wasn't the brave one. He was the anxious kind. Hated strangers, loud noises, even tinfoil. So him hiding wasn't super unusual. But after what had just happened, I needed to see him. I needed something to make sense. I checked under the couch, behind the TV stand, in the laundry room. Finally found him under my bed, wedged all the way back against the wall, completely still. His eyes were blown wide and he wouldn't come out, not even when I offered him one of those tuna treats he'd kill for. I didn't sleep that night, not really, just laid in bed with the door cracked and the hall light on. I kept thinking about that feeling, how real it was, how long it lasted. It wasn't a twitch or a breeze. It moved around my leg like it had purpose. I told my mom the next morning. She shrugged it off. "Maybe a draft from the heater," she said, pouring coffee like it was nothing. "But the cats ran," I told her. "Moose hid. That's not a draft." She didn't say anything after that, just kind of nodded and went back to what she was doing. It never happened again. Not exactly. But from that night on, I stopped brushing my teeth with the bathroom door closed. Story 7. I used to work at a Pep Boys in Victorville, California, back in my early 20s. This was about a decade ago. I still live here, unfortunately. Nothing like the high desert to make you feel like time's standing still. The store's long gone now, but back then it was one of the few places hiring, so I took the job. I wasn't thrilled about it. Weird vibe, even during the day. Huge, echoey garage, flickering fluorescence. Those tall shelves that seemed to go on forever. But I needed the paycheck. I was a shift lead, and my friend Marcus was the assistant manager. We'd worked together for years, so we trusted each other. Good dude. The place had this dumb lighting system that would automatically shut off at 11 p.m. unless you flipped a manual override switch hidden in a side room off the mechanic's garage. Total pain. But we were doing inventory that night, and it was already past 11, so I had to go flip it. I remember the moment I walked into the garage to hit that switch. It was dead quiet except for that faint hum you get from the big overhead lamps. Cold too. Colder than usual. I thought maybe the bay doors had been cracked open or something, but they weren't. Anyway, I flipped the switch, kept the lights on, and went back inside. Marcus was finishing up at the front counter. There was a little security DVR playing on a display shelf next to the registers. I walked by, hit the stop button, pulled the disc out. Standard closing procedure. All the computers were dark, like they always went after sitting idle too long. Just that little blinking light in the corner. "Almost done?" I asked. He nodded. "5 more minutes." I sat at the stool behind the counter, waiting. I remember looking at the analog clock on the wall. It was 11:37. We locked up the drawers, printed the closing receipts, turned off the open sign, and walked back through the garage so I could flip the light switch back to auto. Marcus had a little mag light he kept clipped to his belt, so he lit the way. When the switch flipped, the store went black instantly. Pitch black, like a cave. Only the flashlight and the green glow from the emergency exit sign by the front doors gave us any light. We walked back into the store, and that's when it happened. The moment we stepped into the front end again, I just stopped cold. All the computers were awake, green text glowing across every screen. They hadn't made a sound, just on. I know for a fact no one touched them. I hadn't even logged back in. The DVR, the one I physically turned off, it was on. Blue screen, static hissing from the speakers, like an old TV left on the wrong input. The drawer scanners, the ones built into the counters, were glowing red, all of them, projecting that laser grid they only emit when actively scanning. But these weren't just blinking. These were shooting straight up like laser beams, touching the damn ceiling. Marcus whispered, "What the hell is that?" I didn't answer. I stepped forward and waved my hand through the laser from one of the scanners. It was real, solid. I could feel it humming in my palm. The lasers were shaking. like the machines were overheating. The air in the store felt charged, like just before a thunderstorm. Marcus leaned in close and said, "Let's go. Now." I reached for the DVR, shut it off again, screen went black, and we made a beeline for the front doors. I was already halfway to my car when Marcus, who was locking the double glass doors behind us, shouted, "Did you see that?" I turned back. "See what?" He didn't move, just stared at the glass. I walked a little closer, and that's when he said, dead serious, "As I locked it, the glass bowed, like something slammed into it from inside." I laughed, nervous. "What, like someone threw a box?" "No," he said, "like a person. I heard it. It hit hard. It bowed out toward me." We both just stood there staring at the doors. Nothing on the other side but darkness. "I'm not going back in there," Marcus said. We stood in silence, listening. There was nothing. Not a creak. Not a footstep. Then from inside, from way in the back, past the aisles, came this click. Just one. Like someone had lifted a product off the shelf and placed it in a cart. We ran. I didn't go back for my jacket. I didn't care. I drove home with my hands shaking on the wheel. I couldn't sleep that night. I kept trying to rationalize it. Maybe the computers rebooted. Maybe I hadn't turned the DVR off properly. Maybe the scanners were glitching out. But the bowing glass, that sound, the click in the dark, no way. The next morning I called Marcus. I said, "Man, I gotta ask. That thing you said about the glass..." He cut me off. "It wasn't just glass. I felt the impact through the door." We never brought it up again. Story 8. I live in a two-bedroom rental outside of Flagstaff, Arizona. Quiet neighborhood. Pines everywhere. It's the kind of place where people wave from their porches and leave their doors unlocked, which is probably why what happened still sticks with me like a splinter under the skin. I was 23 at the time. My mom had given me two half-dollar coins when I was a kid, Kennedy ones. Said they were lucky, though really she just thought they were cool and old-looking. I'd never seen anyone use one before, and neither had she. She gave me those coins in a little velvet pouch, and I kept them in the top drawer of my nightstand like a tiny treasure chest. They'd been there for over a decade, untouched. Anyway, this happened on a Sunday, late morning. I remember because I was hungover, still wearing what I'd fallen asleep in, and standing in the kitchen shoveling cereal into my mouth while my girlfriend Mia was doing the dishes. She always hated how I just let them pile up. She flipped on the garbage disposal to grind down some lemon peels or something, but right away it made this awful screeching noise, like metal grinding on metal. She jumped back, turned it off, and gave me this look like, "What the hell did you drop in there?" I shrugged, walked over, and we both leaned in. She reached in carefully, muttering, "If it's a fork, I'm gonna kill you." A few seconds later, she pulled her hand out with something clutched between her fingers, looking confused. It was a half-dollar coin. She laughed nervously and handed it to me. "Did you drop one of your coins in the sink?" I felt a chill crawl down my spine. "No," I said immediately. "No, they're in the bedroom. I haven't touched them." Mia gave me this skeptical look. "Okay, but it's the same kind, right?" It was. Kennedy, 1972. Still not totally believing it, I went to the bedroom, opened the nightstand drawer, and pulled out the pouch. Both coins were still in there. I checked them one by one. Same wear, same feel, same everything. They were right where they always were, untouched. So I brought them back to the kitchen and laid all three coins out on the counter. Three half-dollar coins. Mia didn't say anything for a while. She just stared at them, eyes darting from one to the next. "You're sure you didn't pick one up from somewhere? A store? A tip jar?" "No," I said. "No one gives out half dollars. You've never even seen one outside this house." That's when something changed in her face. It wasn't just confusion anymore. It was discomfort. The kind that hits you when you realize something isn't just weird, it's wrong. We called my mom. She hadn't been over in weeks. I asked if she'd brought another half dollar by, maybe as a joke or something. "No," she said. "I only ever gave you two. Where would I even find a third one?" I didn't like how quiet the line went after that. like even she was spooked. Mia kept trying to rationalize it, pacing the kitchen with her arms folded tight across her chest. Maybe it belonged to a previous tenant, she said. Maybe it got stuck in the pipes. But that didn't make any sense. We'd been living there for over a year. Why would it suddenly decide to show up now? What are the odds of that coin being the exact same year and make as the ones my mom gave me? I picked up the third coin again and looked closer. I swear to God, it felt different. Same weight, same size. But the edges were slightly sharper. The metal was colder than it should have been, like it had just come out of a freezer. I turned it over and stared at Kennedy's profile. His face looked just a bit off. I can't explain how. Like his eyes were too hollow, too deep. That night I didn't sleep. I kept the three coins on the dresser, thinking I'd try to forget about it in the morning. But around 3:30 a.m., I woke up. Not to a noise exactly, more like a feeling, like something was watching me. The bedroom was quiet, no traffic, no wind. Mia was asleep beside me, breathing steady. I sat up and looked toward the dresser. All three coins were gone. I stared for a long time, heart pounding so hard it hurt. I got up, turned on the light. Nothing. The pouch was there, but empty. Mia, I whispered, shaking her shoulder. They're gone. The coins are gone. She blinked awake and sat up. What? They were right there. I left all three of them on the dresser. We turned the room upside down, checked the floor, the drawers, under the bed, even the bathroom. Nothing. Finally, Mia just stared at me. I don't want those things in this house anymore. I didn't lose them, I said. I know you didn't. She wouldn't say it out loud, but we both felt it. That same unease from earlier, now thick in the air. Like we weren't supposed to have that third coin. Like it came from somewhere it shouldn't have. In the morning, all three coins were back in the pouch. I didn't touch them. Neither did Mia. We wrapped the pouch in a towel and drove to my mom's house, left it with her, and told her to keep it somewhere safe or throw it away. Story 9. I'm not a skeptic, but I'm not a believer either. Not anymore. When you're a kid and you see stuff, shadows moving where there shouldn't be any, dark figures in your room, things whispering your name, you start to wonder if you're just messed up. And yeah, for a while I thought I was. Turns out I wasn't haunted. I was sick. Narcolepsy with cataplexy. Diagnosed at 20. That explained the hallucinations, the sleep paralysis, all the demonic crap I used to experience. It was almost a relief, really. After years of meds and shrinks and people thinking I was crazy, I had a name for it. But there's this one thing that happened before the diagnosis. One night, and no matter how much I try to brush it off, I still get chills just thinking about it. Back in the early 2000s, I was deep into paranormal investigation, before it became a trend with all the fake cable shows. I had my own team, four of us total. We were serious about it. I spent a fortune on gear. Night vision, Sony camcorder, EMF meter, IR sensor, walkies, the works. We even shot on film back then, because digital sucked. A friend of a friend told me about this place way out in the sticks in California, like deep BFE. No GPS then, just paper maps and long drives. The story was this. A dad lived out there in an old ranch house with his two daughters. Abusive, real bad. One day, the older girl, she'd had enough. She let the gas run in the house, then went outside and hanged herself from a tree. When the dad came home and lit a cigarette, the place exploded. Killed him, the little sister, everyone. All gone. I didn't even know if it was real, but the house was supposedly still standing, just burned out and gutted. I managed to find it. Took hours. Place was miles from anything. No neighbors, no road signs. Just empty, dried up land and that charred house sitting like a tombstone in the dirt. Covered in graffiti, broken windows, tagging from kids who probably dared each other to go inside. It looked dead, like it didn't want to be looked at. We showed up the first night just before dusk, set up all the gear, walked the property. Nothing happened. EMF spiked a bit near the property edge, but I figured power lines. We stayed out past midnight, packed up, watched all the video and audio the next day. Nothing. Second night, same routine. But something was different. I started feeling uneasy the second we pulled up, like the air was heavier. We stayed in pairs this time, I told my friend Crisco, her real name's Christine, but we all called her Crisco since high school, to stick with me. The EMF was going nuts around the house, and the IR sensor picked up these weird heat signatures near the tree where the girl had supposedly hanged herself. I remember saying out loud, "It's probably an animal," but even as I said it, I knew I was lying to myself. Still, we left without anything solid. I figured it was just nerves. That was our second and last night. At least, that's what we thought. The next day, I got the film developed from the disposable I used to snap stills. This was early 2004. Two rolls. I had taken a shot of the front of the house right when we arrived. It was blurry. Nothing crazy. But I swear, in the upper window, you could almost make out a face. It looked like a little girl. But again, old film, damaged house, shadows. I didn't jump to conclusions. But then came the third night, and that's the one I'll never be able to explain away. We weren't planning to go back, but something kept bugging me, like we missed something. I convinced the others to do one more visit. "Just to wrap it up," I said. We got there earlier this time, a little before sunset. The moment I stepped out of the car, it hit me. Hard, I felt sick, dizzy. My stomach turned. My hands were trembling, and not from adrenaline. This was something else, like my body knew something before my mind caught up. Crisco radioed in from across the field. "I think we should go." "I don't feel right." The others agreed. Everyone said the same thing. Something was off. I was near the car, setting up the tripod with the Sony cam, when I felt this wave of pressure, like the air got sucked out of the place. The temperature dropped fast. I looked around. Nothing. Just that dead land, that dead house. But I couldn't shake this feeling that we were being watched. No, not watched, hunted. Then it happened. From somewhere behind the house, maybe near the tree, I don't know, came this scream. Not just a sound, it ripped through the air, high-pitched, pure terror. It sounded like a little girl screaming for her life. But it wasn't just fear in the scream, it was agony, pain so deep it cracked your soul. It hit me so hard my knees buckled. I dropped the camera. Then Crisco came flying out from the left side of the property, yelling into her walkie, "Get in the fucking car! Go, go, go!" The other two were right behind her, running full speed. We all collided near the car, tripping over each other to pile into a two-door coupe like clowns in a horror show. I was last in and slammed the door shut. We peeled out down that dirt road, kicking up dust. We didn't even speak for the first 10 minutes of the drive, just breathing hard, eyes wide, trying to make sense of what just happened. And the worst part, that feeling, that sick, crawling feeling followed us. It came with us, sat in the car like a fifth passenger. None of us slept that night. Next morning, I went to get the gear out of the trunk. That's when I saw them, two handprints, in the dust on the back of the car, small, like a child's, not smudges, full, perfect prints, one on each side of the trunk latch, like something had pushed against it, or maybe just watched us leave. I swear on my life, there were no kids there, no people, no one for miles. We didn't stop, we didn't touch the back of the car, and those prints weren't there when we loaded up. After that, we never went back. I still have the photo from that second roll. I don't show it to people anymore. It makes me feel sick when I look at it too long. Not because of what you can see, but because of what you almost can. Story 10. I don't usually talk about this because honestly, it still messes with my head. But if you're asking for the creepiest moment of my life, something I still can't explain, then yeah, this is it. I was living with my parents at the time, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, in this weird little house they'd just bought. It wasn't old, like haunted household, but something about it felt off. Not right away, but slowly. I moved in about 2 weeks after my mom and stepdad had already set everything up. You know, unpacked, painted, made the place look like a home. The weirdness started almost immediately. Footsteps upstairs when no one was up there, the sound of doors clicking shut, little taps on the wall. I figured it was just settling noises or my mind overreacting to being in a new place. Classic stuff. At one point, I even brought up carbon monoxide, looked it up, freaked myself out, but we got the place tested. totally clean. My stepdad told me something once when he was painting. Said he saw a face peeking out from one of the rooms. It was all dark inside, and the door, this one weird door, slammed in his face out of nowhere. What made it creepier was the door had no handle on the inside, just a bolt on the outside. No reason for it to close like that. We started calling it the Room of Doom, half joking, half not. We ended up using that room for storage. I never liked going in there. Anyway, this one night, I remember it clearly. I got home from work a little late. My parents were out, some dinner thing, and I was alone in the house. Just me and the cat, Luna. She was this black and white thing, quiet, never really got scared of much. I grabbed a laundry basket and went to drop some stuff off in the storage room. The Room of Doom. It still hadn't been carpeted yet, so it was just old wooden floorboards. Kind of echoey. Cold. Against the far wall was this heavy metal attic ladder we kept in there. Must have weighed a good 30, 40 kilos. It leaned flat against the wall. I didn't even notice it at first. I dropped the washing down, turned to leave, and as I stepped out of the room, Luna, who was just lying on the hallway floor, suddenly stood up, all stiff. Her fur went up, tail puffed out like a bottle brush, and she hissed, loud, but not at me, past me. I froze. I'd never seen her like that. Then I heard this scrape, long and slow, from behind me, like metal sliding against wood. I turned back. The ladder was standing up, not leaning, not halfway propped, standing, straight up, for maybe a second, maybe two, and then it tipped, hard, straight toward me. I barely had time to move. I jumped back and the thing slammed into the doorframe, jamming itself between the door and the opposite wall. The sound it made, metal against wood, it echoed all through the house. My heart was pounding. I stood there staring at the door, now jammed half shut, that ladder wedged like it had been aimed to block the exit. I thought maybe it slipped, but how? It would have had to lift off the wall, stand upright, balance, and fall toward me. No wind, no slope in the floor, nothing. I tried to open the door, but it wouldn't budge. It was stuck solid. I ended up sitting on the floor, trying to calm Luna down with one hand and reaching through the small gap with the other, trying to shift the ladder. It was heavy and awkward, and I couldn't see what I was doing. 30 minutes, maybe more. Eventually, I got it to slide just enough to push the door open. I stood in the middle of the room, breathing like I'd run a mile. I checked the walls, the ceiling, even tried to rock the floorboards with my foot, like maybe something had shifted, but nothing. That ladder had been flat against the wall. No one else was in the house. I didn't even tell my parents right away. What was I supposed to say? Hey, the ladder tried to kill me. After that, we stopped using that room, shut the door, put a chair in front of it. The weird stuff kept happening, but nothing ever that aggressive again. Doors opening at night, voices my mom would hear. She still swears someone said her name in the hallway once. But that ladder, that was the last straw for me. I moved out not long after.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.